So your take on what Father James Martin, as I like to call him, Jay, is doing, and why isn't some why hasn't he been Thanos snapped?
Well, no, I wasn't going to talk about James Martin. The less said about that twerp, the better.
Okay.
I was going to talk about the Fulton Sheen thing.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about Fulton Sheen.
First of all, obviously, only certain bishops can gripe to Rome about something and have Rome act, and those are the ones who are in favor in the regime, and that's it, obviously. I mean, if Bishop Strickland of Tyler, Texas, called up and said, you know, you need to do something about little Jimmy Martin running around doing his pervert stuff all over the place. I won't let him in my diocese, but he's corrupting people all over the place, including Catholic youth at colleges and high schools and blah, blah, blah. They're not going to say, oh, okay, you know, Bishop of little Tyler, Texas, we'll do exactly what you say. Because he's not in favor. I mean, he's doing stuff, I'm sure, on a frequent basis to get himself decidedly out of favor, because he's just too Catholic. So they're not going to listen to him. So obviously it's only bishops, and I'm not. We don't know who it is. They should make themselves public, and they should give their reasons. We don't know who it is, but it's perhaps people like Supich and Tobin and similar ecclesiastical riffraff who are in the ascendancy. They're in favor. You know, they're the fair-haired boys of the regime.
Brother, you have Maggie O'Connell and Stitches in the other room. First you called James Martin a twerp. You twerp! And now we have a second brother, a neologism from brother Andre, ecclesiastical. What did you call them?
I can't remember. Riffraff, ecclesiastical riffraff.
So two neologisms. Twerp is already in existence, but ecclesiastical riffraff.
Well, actually, I like Aaron's got that was a torpological statement.
Torpological statement.
He's taking tropological and he's taken the word twerp and tropologicalized it. Kind of funny.
Now, brother, is a neologism, is that Greek or Latin? That's Greek, right?
Neologism is a Greek origin word. Okay. New word.
New word.
Logos, right? Logos.
Right.
So picking up my train of thought, which got hopelessly derailed for a bit. Okay, so here's my take. Aside from the fact that it's obviously only certain bishops who are in favor who could have possibly derailed this thing or caused a delay, and I can't say what their motives are. I don't even know who they are.
I can give you a motive. Tourism.
I am not upset about this. I have never been enthusiastic about his canonization. I have never been enthusiastic about his cause, and I can tell you why. Okay. Two reasons. I will name them.
Right.
Charlie Curran and Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. Those two names represent what was wrong with Bishop Sheen. Bishop Sheen was the bishop of Rockford, New York.
Okay.
Rochester, New York. And he was a diocesan ordinary. He was too busy being a TV star. And he neglected his duties, and one of his priests, by the name of Charles Curran, known lovingly as Charlie Curran to his fans, who was a depraved moral theologian, who was an immoral moral theologian, and who was one of the signatories of that abominable letter, I believe it was a full-page ad that they took out in the New York Times, when Humanae Vitae was published. Mind you, I'm not a huge fan of Humanae Vitae because I think it was inadequate. But the condemnation of birth control was good, right? So he unfortunately he talked a lot of bad language in the thing. He did too many hat tips to the modern cult of Malthus. But when Pope Paul VI did the right thing in condemning artificial birth control, where everybody thought he was going to go the other way, and priests were preparing people in this country to go the other way and telling people, well, the Pope's about to come out and say that you can practice birth control, so it's all fine. And Paul VI made this unnecessarily long delay in coming out with Humanae Vitae, and his own advisory board told him, yeah, you can soften the church's teaching on birth control. It's okay. And that got out into the public. And Paul VI was negligent, and he was dilatory in doing the right thing. And because of that, contraception was deeply entrenched in much of the Catholic populace by the time Humanae Vitae came out. And part of the problem with that was that priests, like moral theologians, like Charlie Curran, were telling people it's okay. So when it came out, Paul VI, and this is the last thing he wrote, he was disillusioned because he thought everybody was going to love him, you know, because he gave the church such wonderful modernity. Then all the people that loved him hated on him, good and hard, when he came out with Humanae Vitae. And one of them was Charlie Curran. They published this open letter of dissent in the New York Times, and it was a full-page ad with all these signatures. One of them was Charlie Curran. Guess whose bishop Charlie Curran was? Guess who Charlie Curran's bishop was?
Bishop Sheen.
He could have done something at any time to suspend him, to silence him, to forbid him from teaching at Catholic University of America, where he was corrupting young students, and he did nothing.
Okay, brother, quickly. Okay,
that's one. If I were the devil's advocate, I would have, but of course we don't have one of those anymore, but if I were the devil's advocate, I would drive that point home. And the other one is all the kind words he said about Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who was a nut job Jesuit.
Absolutely.
Who was a fake lying scientist and a fake lying theologian. He fooled the scientists to think that he was a brilliant theologian, and he fooled the theologians to think that he was a brilliant scientist. He was a sacrilegious fornicator who had a Jewish mistress named Rhoda de Terra. I know three people, you know one of them, who met Rhoda de Terra and had an afternoon with her in her apartment. One of them was John Zmarek. Another one was my friend Wilfredo Camellas, Father Wilfredo Camellas, who's since deceased.
He died, Father Camellas.
Yeah. Yeah. The other one was Farley Clinton, who some listeners might know who that is, a very eccentric character. But they met Rhoda de Terra, and they got an earful all about Father Teilhard. She was an English Jew, and she was his lover. And her husband was such a fanboy of Teilhard de Chardin that he was thoroughly flattered that he was being cuckolded by such a genius. These are perverse people. Now, this is Teilhard de Chardin, who, by the way, if anybody doesn't know, he was an uber Darwinist. Yep. And he took Darwin and pushed it to the level of a spiritual evolution, so that we're all working our way towards the omega point when we all become God. This perfidious Jesuit was actually a pantheist. He was a pantheist. And so it was de rigueur at one time for people to say nice things about Teilhard de Chardin. Ratzinger did it twice while he was Pope. Now, he did qualify one of his recommendations, one of his praises of Teilhard. But I mean, you don't praise people like that. These are cancers on the mystical body. They are to be abominated and rejected. His works were forbidden to be published, but they were secretly circulated in Jesuit religious houses among the novices and scholastics and so forth, so that he helped to corrupt a whole generation of Jesuits. So I knew a priest, I will not name him, but good man, he's a Monsignor, from the home diocese of Fulton Sheen. Keep in mind, he was in New York, he was a suffragan of, New Tenochtitlan, as you call it. He was a suffragan bishop of that diocese, archdiocese, because he was as bishop of I'll mess up the city name if I don't think about it enough. it's not Rockford. That's Illinois. It's Rochester, New York. So as bishop of Rochester, he was a suffragan to the Cardinal Archbishop of New York. And he and Spellman, by the way, couldn't stand each other. He ended up in the cathedral in New York because of that. Now, his home diocese was Peoria, Illinois. And I knew a priest of that diocese who worked in the Holy See. I won't name the congregation that he worked for, because that might be too close to home. But I didn't know him like he was my buddy, like I could call him. We're Facebook friends now, but he knew me, and you know, I saw him a couple times. We met and chatted and stuff like that. So this particular priest, Monsignor, he was working really hard. I mean, he must have put in hundreds and hundreds of man hours of work on the cause for Fulton Sheen, and his heart was really in it. I was talking to him one time, and I said, "Father, Monsignor, do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions, sort of devil's advocate style, about Fulton Sheen?" And he smiled, and he said, "Yeah, sure, go ahead." So I said, "What about Charlie Curran?" He had no answer. He had no answer. And he acknowledged that it was a fact because, of course, he knew Fulton Sheen's life inside and out.
Right, right.
I mean, he was helping to compile. You know, when they do these causes, they compile hundreds of pages of a book based upon, of course, thousands of pages of documentation. They basically make a gigantic book advocating for the cause. There's a technical name for it, which I forget. But he wrote that. He did most of the work. And so he knew Fulton Sheen's life inside and out. And he had no answer for that. And then I said, "And what about Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, the fact that he praised de Chardin?" And he said, "Well, you know, everybody was doing it in those days in the 1940s. It was common." I said, "No, Monsignor, not everybody. Father Leonard Feeney, when he heard Teilhard speak in person once at a Jesuit house, to an audience of only Jesuits, walked up to him afterwards and called him a heretic to his face in front of everyone." And the superior of the house turned to Father Feeney, goes, "Len," like correcting him. And he says, "But it's true." And the priest in private, his superior, told him, "Well, I know, but he's so respected, you can't tell him that." So my point is, not everybody thought this. Fulton Sheen was weak on this stuff, and he was also an indifferentist. You can listen to stuff that Fulton Sheen said where he's talking about how Hindus go to heaven as Hindus and all this stuff. He is a good illustration. He was a brilliant man, really brilliant. He had studied at the Louvain. He was incredibly gifted. He knew way more theology than he showed in his popular broadcasts. He wrote some brilliant stuff. We have two things by him on our website, Communism and Woman and the Decline of Controversy. I'll throw them up in the chat room. Both of them are fantastic. He was an absolute genius, but he was also extremely egotistical. One of our brothers, Brother Hugh, met him at a function. He knew that Fulton Sheen was going to be at this person's house being entertained, and it was going to be like a public little gathering of, well, a private gathering of certain invited guests. Brother Hugh was invited, so he went with a friend, a layman who's still alive. I know him, and I've heard about this meeting. I heard about it both from Bill, the guy that was with Brother Hugh, and from Brother Francis, who told me about it. He asked Brother Hugh, who he had a Purple Heart from World War II. He fought on the Eastern Front. Absolute, dogged, fearless man. Fearless. And he walked up to Bishop Sheen, introduced himself, said who he was, who he represented, and all that stuff. And Bishop Sheen sort of, you know, gave him a look like, you know, okay, well, let's get this over with. And he said, "We'd like to publish two pieces that you wrote, which we find to be brilliant, in our magazine." And Bishop Sheen said, "Well, lots of people want to use my name." And Brother Hugh said, "That's exactly what we don't want to use." He said, "We just want to use your thoughts." Now, this is funny because Sheen looked offended, but then he realized that really it was a compliment because they didn't care about his name. They cared about what he thought, which right. was good. So he said, "Sure, go ahead." So it was Communism and Woman and the Decline of Controversy, both of which were published in addition to the Housetops.
Okay, Brother Andre Marie is with the St. Benedict Center. You can find him online, hiding in plain sight at Catholicism.org, and that's where you would find those two pieces, but the links are in the chat room. Brother, let me just chime in here for a minute on the subject of Father Curran, right?
Yep.
Okay. I wrote a speech once upon a time, and I was never invited back after I delivered this. I wrote a piece called Apostolate Denied, Apathy in the Pro-Life Movement. And my argument was basically that idiot Christians put all of their eggs in the grand old party's basket instead of appealing to the highest authority that's irrevocable and saying that, no, you can't kill babies because God says you can't. and then I trace the history of how this happened. In one of the pages, and I put a graphic, a screenshot of what I had written and what I told the pro-life, pro-life society of, I'm trying to remember the, Monroe, of Monroe, Michigan.
Monroe.
So, Father Curran knew a woman named Rosemary Reuther.
Oh, yeah, Rosemary Reuther, notorious liberal.
I'll just read from what I wrote. This is the legacy of post-Vatican II apathy. And how do we know that Vatican II is the culprit? Because Rosemary Reuther told us. On October the 4th, 1984, now this is not the ad you were talking about, but it's pretty much the same. On October the 4th, 1984, a paid advertisement appeared in the New York Times under the sponsorship of a group called Catholics for a Free Choice. The ad contended that there is more than one legitimate, that is, theologically and ethically defensible, viewpoint on abortion within the Roman Catholic tradition. It called for a dialogue, how you like that word, a dialogue on abortion among Catholics, a dialogue that would acknowledge the situation of pluralism, not only in regard to practice, but in regard to the ethical state of the question. Now, that's taken from the ad. When these apostates were appropriately warned by Pope John Paul II that failure to issue public retraction, citing magisterial teaching on abortion, would result in excommunication, JP2 actually did that. I read the letter. Over half of the original letter signers obeyed, the papal authority asserted. The other half would gradually recant, but the final group, asserting the flawed doctrine that came from Vatican II, remained defiantly aligned with the serpent and his cult of death. And they wrote this: "We, as Roman Catholics, affirm our solidarity with those who signed the statement and agree to stand with all who face reprisals. We shall become the dismissed, the disinvited, and the unwelcome. The ties which unite the faithful are stronger than those which separate them. Let there be unity in what is necessary, freedom in what is doubtful, and charity in everything." Doesn't that just sound like post-Vatican II uncharitable, charismatic, sloppy crap?
Oh yeah, that's definitely slop, Mike. That's
absolutely slop. They published that. So in the new, they went back to the New Tenochtitlan Times.